These are the people in the neighborhood. These are the people in God's neighborhood. These are the people Jesus died for. But let's be honest. They are the people on the street that I hope I never meet. Even though they're the people in God's neighborhood. A little confusing, don't you think? Monsters in the baptistry and homeless people sleeping on the stage. Weird characters popping from behind the wall. What if that's what church is supposed to look like? What if that's the entire point? That church is supposed to be a little chaotic because the neighborhood is here. I mean, it's quite different to set up a light display or hand out a mug or even put up a box of food and try to love the neighborhood. But what happens to your church if you bring them here? I think we have to decide. How do we, Parkview Christian Church, want to define that word? Neighborhood. The dictionary says it's a place or region near. It's the people living near one another, or a section lived in by neighbors and usually having distinguishing characteristics. Which definition is it? Well, reality is it's D, all of the above. But you have to appreciate the idea that how you choose to define your neighborhood is how you're going to define your church. You see, if the neighborhood is defined by a place, a building, a structure, an address, a location, a certain perimeter around the building, if that's how you establish the definition of your church, then it becomes defined by boundaries and borders. This is my church. This is my stage. This is my baptistry. This is my pews. This is my parking spaces. Because we define our neighborhood by an address, a place. If the neighborhood gets defined by distinguishing characteristics, and I began to define my neighborhood based off of what I want it to be. I go out into my neighborhood and, well, I'm looking for things that make me comfortable. I go out into my neighborhood and I'm looking for things that will make it easy for me to live here. I'm looking for things that are convenient to my life. If I just want it defined by characteristics. But folks, if I decide to define my neighborhood, my people, look out. The world is about to change. You see, because if I define my neighborhood by my neighbors, then I have to realize my neighbors are real people that have real problems. But you know what? I can relate. I'm a real people, and trust me, I have real problems. And if I define the neighborhood by the people, then these are real people that have real sin in their life. I'm okay with that. Guess why? Because I'm a real people, and I have real sin that I struggle with on a daily basis. If people are define the definition, then we have to come to the realization these are real people with a real broken past. Okay. I'm good with that because guess what? You don't even want to think about my past. It's not this nice straight arrow line toward God. It's got some twists and some turns and some overs and some unders. And sometimes there's a line missing. And you get the idea that my past, it's not broken. I mean, it's broken. It's not solid. If I define the neighborhood neighborhood by people, then I come to the conclusion they are real people that have a need, not a want. A need, maybe not a desire at this point, but a need to have a real relationship with this guy named Jesus. Good news, guess what? Me too. That's me. I need that relationship too. I'm not excluded. So you understand, when I define the neighborhood by people, I am actually part of that neighborhood, and we're all kind of in this together. But let's be honest. This is not how we want to define church oftentimes, is it? Church is a time on my calendar for the week. The time I'm supposed to be here and the time I'm supposed to leave. It's a place. Maybe it's the same seat that you've been sitting in since you were like knee-high to a grasshopper. I don't know. Maybe it's the parking space. You got to have that right. Maybe it's a set of something. We don't define church by our neighbors. So this morning, as we end this sermon series, and if you've walked into this, and this is the first week, we've been at this for 6 weeks, and all of the characters that showed up here this morning have shown up in video forms in previous sermons, and so here they are in person, and today's sermon, I guess, is more of a couple of lessons that I need you to remember. If we're going to define our church by our neighborhood, then we better go on a search for the lost lessons of love. Really? You found something? You've heard these before, folks. I don't have anything new for you, but here's the thing. They're lost because we have lost them. And well, our first lesson comes from, well, this guy named Jesus. And it's in John chapter 13, verses 31 through 38. Let me read the story to you. When he has gone, Jesus said, now the Son of Man is glorified and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I will tell you now. Where I'm going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples. You like to write in your Bible? Pull out your highlighter and just go ahead and highlight that one. If you have love for one another. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I go? Why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Then Jesus answered, will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. We know this story, right? We drag it out sometime March, April-ish every year, right around the time of Easter. We like to talk about how Peter didn't stick to what he said. But that's not the point here. I want you to see something even more important. Jesus gave a new command. Jesus gave some new material here. He said a new command. And you know what? The disciples' ears should have perked up and they should have been on the edge of their seat. They should have had their bulletin and their pen out. And they're like, hit me up, Jesus. I got something new. And he said, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples and if you love one another. And I'm sure the disciples are like, you know what? That's not new. We've heard that our entire life. They preached that all the way back in Leviticus about loving your neighbors. Come on, Jesus, something new. But Jesus was making sure they understand it's new because they had never actually done it before. You see, reality is, Peter missed the lesson. You see, how Jesus wanted Peter to see it is, this is how everyone will know you are my disciples. This is how you know. Guess what? Not by our music style. That's not how they know you're a Christian. Whether you sing from a hymn or a screen or you have a drum or a piano or you sing a cappella, you know what? Your music style is not what's supposed to define you as a Christian. Guess what? Not by the name on the sign. You notice everybody that was up on stage today that is part of the church. We had on our nice Parkview shirts with our little logo right in the middle. And guess what? You know I'm part of the church because look, I got the name right here. And a lot of times we get very attached to names and we get very centered on what this name means. But you know what? This doesn't define the church. This defines maybe a local body that is identifying together. But this logo and that sign out front, it doesn't define the church according to Jesus. Guess what? We're not even defined by a set of beliefs that we cobbled together to show that we get it. Jesus says, even that thing that you believe, that is not what defines the church. This is what defines the church. What is this? Love for your neighbor. Love for one another. Here's the funny thing. I hate to tell you this. You're not even supposed to be defined by a building or the furniture in the building. They're irrelevant. I keep telling you guys, I'm here all during the week, and when you're not here, this is nothing but an empty building. Unless I cut the heat on, it's an empty cold building. Or in the summertime, it's an empty hot building. It's just a building. The pews are just pews. The table is just a table. It is just furniture. It has nothing to do with church. Because Jesus said the church is defined by four-letter word, this. And then he replaces this with another four-letter word, love. And again, Peter missed the lesson. I love Peter's attitude when Jesus told him he was leaving and you don't get to come. Peter said, don't you dare leave me in this neighborhood. I want to move on up with you, Jesus. Take me on up to heaven now. Come on, Jesus. I get it. I'm even willing to die for you. Go ahead, take my life now, and I'll just go hang out in heaven with you. What do you say? Lord, where are you going? Lord, why can't I follow? The questions are very telling about how Peter sees his faith, because his faith is about proximity to Jesus. If I can't be close to Jesus, then my faith is no good to me. And Jesus turns everything upside down because Peter's got the idea that Jesus was leaving. He heard the fact that Jesus was going somewhere. He missed the fact he was being left behind to do a job because he was so obsessed with being close to Jesus. And you know what? I get it. Because guess what? Me and Peter got a lot in common. Sometimes we get so focused on heaven, we forget the idea that it's about love. We miss the lesson because we want to learn more facts and figures about Jesus so we can follow him. You know, we want to go into these in-depth studies and we want to have these debates about what this means and what that means. And we get all caught up into these big facts and discussions, and we forget the fact that Jesus is kind of a simple guy. He came, he died, he rose, right? He came. He gave us his life for us. What else do you need to know? I'm sorry, you don't need to know how many hairs he had in his beard, or even if he had a beard. Irrelevant conversation. It's all about the person of Jesus, not just the facts and figures and distinguishing characteristics. We miss that we follow him best when we are sharing with the neighborhood. That's when the church is at its best. The church is at its best when we are focused on them and not us. When they're not those people, but they are the people that God called me to reach. That is when the church is at the best. And will it sometimes make my church kind of chaotic? Yes. We get very stuck on the fact that we want to be just like the first century church. Well, keep in mind, first century church welcomed monsters. First century church ministered to those that were poor and homeless. First century church had an undying need to reach out to those that were lost in sin and not judge them, but show them Jesus. The first century church reached out to those that were lost in their own space and weren't able to love themselves. They showed love to them anyway. Still want to be like the first century church? It's all about the neighborhood, folks. Those that God has sent us. Now, I told you there were two lessons. And the second one, this is another one of those familiar stories. find in Luke chapter 14, verses 21 through 23. Go quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so my house will be full. And the first thing you think is you left out half the story. Yes, I did. Because you know what? The people that made the excuses at the front part of the story are not the focus. It's the people that have had the opportunity to hear the name Jesus. And as he is teaching this lesson to his disciples, I'm sure they're sitting there and they hear these words, go quickly. It is an urgent message that you are being given. For the story, remember, he was throwing a party, so the decorations were hung and the tables were set and the drinks had been poured. And you know what? The food was getting cold. And so he said, go and find me some people. What do you think a church would look like one day if we did it this way? Everybody show up at 10:30. We're going to count who's here. But worship doesn't start until all the pews are filled. So the first part of worship is we send you back out to the neighborhood to find some people and bring them. And nobody gets to start worship until we fill. Let's face it, we wouldn't be very happy, would we? I mean, we upset the clock. And who knows how long it's going to take you to fill this sanctuary. I mean, you'll see 100 people. Where are we going to find 100 people? You get the idea. Jesus said to go, and then when he told them to go, he defined where you get these people. And we don't like this definition, do we? He said, go to the streets, so that would be the things that are running all around this building here. When you're finished with the streets, go to the back alleys. Well, you know what kind of people you find in those back alleys, right? Go out to the roads, so let it get a little bit bigger. And even go so far as when you run out of roads, just take the dirt paths and go to the county lanes and just keep going and going and going. If you want to define the neighborhood for us, he covered everything but Interstate 64 and Interstate 81. So therefore, if nobody feels compelled to go out and stand in the middle of the interstate and preach Jesus, I understand. But those are the only things that are off limits. He tells us we're supposed to be constantly going everywhere there is a people. And he tells us what kind of people we can expect to find. What did he say? Poor, crippled. Those that are going to take effort to get here. They're not going to be able to get here by themselves. They're just going to wander in off the street. If you're poor, you probably don't have the means to come. If you're crippled, you physically can't get here. He says you look for the blind, you look for the lame, you look for anybody you see, provided there is still room for them to come. Now, the last time I checked, I haven't looked up to heaven and saw Jesus post the no vacancy sign. It's not all full. The kingdom's not full. So that means our job is not done. We don't have a retirement plan. When you get to a certain age, you come and you sit in the and you appear. You're like, okay, I've done my part. Now I'm just going to wait for Jesus to come back. That's not how it works, folks. Jesus said, we're all about the neighborhood. And then he uses this word, when you go, compel them to come in. To drive, urge forcibly or irresistibly, to cause or do occur overwhelming pressure. And here's the thing: unfortunately, we've used this word wrong. This is how many of us are going these days. You recognize that picture, right? My mom used to call me this: "Barry, you're like a bull in the china closet." Yeah, you know. We just go in and we charge into people's lives. We're like, we got to deal with this and we got to deal with that. And we just break everything and then we charge back out. And then we look at the door and like, I compelled them. Why don't they want to come to church? Sometimes our compel looks like this. The porcupine in the balloon factory, right? We come running in and we forget that we've got lots of sharp edges and we just run through people's lives and pop, 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 pop. And then we look back like, where'd all the people go? I compelled them. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do? No. Unfortunately, in our distant past, if you know anything about church history, wars have been fought to force people to become Christians. Did you know that? Laws have been passed that tried to force people to become Christians. When that didn't work, we've tried to scare people into being Christians. We've wielded things like guilt, pressure, like a child that found a pair of sharp scissors and now we're running through the house. Show me where I need to go. Because we've defined the word compel wrong. We think that the way you get them into the church is you go out with a roll of duct tape and you find them on the street and you duct tape them and you bring them in and you send them in the pew and you preach at them. We miss the word. Did you see this word, that definition? The word is irresistible. A way to attract and tempting to be resisted. In a way that is too powerful or convincing to be resisted. See, we're supposed to give them a reason to want to come. Last week when the video ended with Sally leaving and Gary turned and he faced the camera, he said, it's time for a different approach. Did you see his approach? What did he do? He promised a monster a bath. Just come. He promised a homeless guy a place to sleep. Just come. Who knows what he promised the ones behind the stage? But he promised Fred that he would get him there. And he promised Matt, I'll get you past the door. Even though you don't look like us, I'm okay with that. It wasn't just about inviting, will you come to church with me? He actually had to get involved in their life. And they had to see him and say, that is irresistible. I don't know what you got. But I don't know where you got it, but I'm going to follow you until I figure out how you got there. Because I want that. That's irresistible. That's loving the neighborhood. See, we've had the answer all along, at least for a couple of years. I know we've had it in worded ways. I just don't think we get it. We lose it. You recognize these words, right? If you hang here for any length of time, you know this is our church vision statement. Our purpose is to give glory to God by meeting people. By the way, those are the people in our neighborhood. By meeting people where they are, sharing Jesus with them. People. Those are the people in the neighborhood, folks. In a meaningful way, and encouraging them, people, those are the ones in the neighborhood, to live in a growing relationship with Him, Jesus. You know what I like about that? You notice how that formed nice little steps? Look at the yellow there. I didn't do that on purpose. It just kind of landed. I'm like, that's just really cool. I'm just going to leave that like that, and I'm going to highlight the steps. We're supposed to be providing a path to Jesus. In the neighborhood. You see, God said, these are the people in the neighborhood. And guess what? If you claim the name of Christ, it is not an option. You must love them. How do I know? Well, this guy named Jesus said, this is how they will know you are Christians. By your love. Not by the building. Not by the music. Not by some belief system. The only way they're ever going to see Jesus is if we, the church, decide, you know what, enough. Enough is enough. These are the people in the neighborhood, and God says love them, and so I am going to love them no matter the cost. What did it cost Jesus to love people? His life. It's kind of funny. Peter said, I'm willing to lay down my life for you, Jesus, just so I can go with you. Jesus had a bigger question. Are you willing to lay down your life for me to reach the neighborhood? Ooh. I don't know about that. Neighborhood's a dangerous place. No. God said, These are the people.